This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
I'm honored to welcome into the studio City Councilor Kevin Lynch joins me for a discussion of current local affairs. Good afternoon, sir.
Afternoon, Coy.
Thank you for coming in. I appreciate it. I know we had to reschedule given the events of last week. You were one of the folks that I said, we'll have to do this next week. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I think that was entirely appropriate.
Yeah. Kevin, I was just talking before the break of the Albemarle County's first homicide of the year. Mr. Godsey was killed. He was jumped as his, he was helping his wife close up shop there at the Wood Grill and make sure that she got home safe. And they were jumped, and he died a couple of days ago as a result of the injuries succumbed to. And you were telling me that actually this is a national trend and that the Charlottesville area is suffering along with everybody else.
That's true. I am becoming very concerned about what is a local and a national trend with crime numbers in Charlottesville. We've been fortunate in Charlottesville that most of where we've seen our increase in crime is in property crime and not the sort of violent crime that results in a death or a beating. But still, I think numbers are unacceptably high. And we got a report from our police department last week, and I was surprised looking through the details of it that community policing had sort of dropped off the radar screen, at least what was being reported as priorities and successes of the police department. I think they still, and having talked with the chief, I believe that they're still doing that. But after reading the report, I started looking at some state and national policing sites and found that it's not just in Charlottesville that community policing is no longer the buzzword that it was in 2000.
What is that again? It's just more cops on the street kind of thing?
The whole idea of community policing is essentially preventative policing, having the cops walking the beat in the neighborhood, interacting with residents, sort of providing a visible presence, not just driving around, but having creating some rapport with residents, which is particularly important in a urban area like Charlottesville, where you have a lot of people living in close proximity to each other, and you want to have good relations with the community so that you can find out if something gets stolen, you know, who might have stolen it. Myself, I've had my bicycle stolen twice. The first time, I just called up all the kids that I knew, and I got it back in a day. I mean, to me, and that's what community policing is all about, is having those kind of relationships so that you can do that.
Yeah. It sounds sort of like policing was done 100 years ago, where it wasn't just the thugs on the street corner. It was a police officer on every street corner, just as a member of the community.
But what you see now in the professional associations of police, and this is national, state, and I think we will buck this trend locally, is more of an emphasis on terrorism task force, gang task force, communications interoperability, disaster preparedness. It's very much a fear-based, security-first-based mentality, and not the sort of preventative stuff that we were doing 5-10 years ago. And what's interesting is...
And this isn't really a Republican-Democrat thing.
Well, it is. Actually, we're talking to the chief.
You think it is?
I talked to the chief about a week ago about this, and basically what he said is, you know, community policing was perceived as being a Clinton administration initiative, and the money's dried up for it. There used to be actual dollars out there that local police departments would try to go after, and that's one of the reasons why community policing was a big buzzword, because there was money out there to be had for that. And if you look at what's happened...
Did it work?
I think it did. If you look at crime statistics in Charlottesville, since 98, I believe, we've had steadily declining crime numbers, and they've every year I've been on council, they've decreased up until 2 years ago. And they turned around in 2005, and they've been going up for 2 years. They're now higher than they were when I got on council in 2000, which I just think that's unacceptable. But it's not just in Charlottesville. It's the whole country. And I'm really becoming concerned that essentially the goals that Al-Qaeda stated is that we're going to turn the country, America, into a fear-based a country, and they're doing that, and we're seeing that, you know, they're distracting our law enforcement, so that we're spending time on terrorism strike forces and not on preventing robberies, not on giving kids something better to do than hang out in gangs. And you know, we're going to lose the fabric of this country if we continue to be intimidated by a fear-based paradigm.
Kevin Lynch is a member of City Council. He's in studio this hour on Charlottesville Right Now, and we look forward to your calls at 977-1070. Kevin, this is a topic that we will return to, of course, throughout this hour, but just to raise it here and get the ball rolling, you were the only city councilor a few weeks ago that did not vote to support the new budget, which is a $136.5 million budget with a tax rate of 95 cents per $100 of assessed value. Why were you the only one who didn't vote to support that budget?
Well, the number that's important to me, I think, is that it was a 12% increase over our last year's budget. And I just don't think that that level of increase was justified. I think that if you look at what the what our normal costs of doing business are in a year, they do go up higher than the cost of living because cities pay for things like steel and concrete and gasoline. They're going up much faster than cost of living, and we don't buy things like cheap consumer goods and clothes that you can get from China. So 6% a year is about what it costs for our pay our workforce and just general cost of doing business. I think there's another 2% in new programs that the majority of people would support. Some additional support for low-income homeowners. While I didn't support the amount of money that we spent for Rescue Squad and EMS, I do think we need to put some more funds into that. A big chunk of it went to schools, and there are some new programs that that are in the schools that I think are positive. I wouldn't pay the teachers enough. Basically, I guess bottom line is I would have been comfortable with an 8% increase. And that's about what we've been doing in previous years. Last year, we did 7.5%. And we made some progress in last year. We had some new programs. I don't think you need to do a 12% increase just because you have 12% in new revenues. And I do believe that there was an additional at least 4 cents that we could have cut out of the budget with very little pain.
Did the Democrats who run the council, and you are part of the Democratic Party, do you think, if I hear you right, that they raised it 12% because they could, and there was nobody there to really oppose them, are they sort of adding fuel to the fire that Democrats aren't fiscally responsible?
Well, I would certainly like to make Democrats more fiscally responsible.
I'm the first to say I think both Republicans and Democrats are not fiscally responsible when it gets down to it, if left to their own devices with nobody to challenge them on their spending. Are we seeing that in the city with this budget?
Perhaps a little bit, although I think really what the dynamic is that there are programs that individual counselors wanted to see, which when you add them up, become rather expensive. But I really think what the fundamental issue is, it's not so much about Republicans versus Democrats. It's about how we set up our budget. And I asked and lost on this back in November that we try to build a budget that does not increase the real estate, the real dollars that are paid by real estate taxes by more than 8%. Because we knew that we were going to get a pretty substantial tax increase.
Because the property values have gone up so much.
Right. And at the time, the counselor said, well, let's just see what a budget without a without any change in the tax rate looks like. Once you say that, once you say to city staff, let's first see what a budget without any changing of the tax rate looks like, they can come up with many ways to spend it. If we had $30 million extra dollars, and not all of it is, I wouldn't say not worthwhile programs. It's just that you have to say, what is the amount that you can afford to spend? And what my concern is, and this is really something that was started by Blake several years ago when he was on council.
Blake Caravati, former mayor.
Blake Caravati was, the first one to really start pushing on the tax cuts. And it was because if you look at historically what property values do, property values tend to appreciate over time at about 8%. And so if we're at an anomaly right now of double-digit assessment increases, and I think we've got to try to lower that rate because what goes up is going to probably won't go down in Charlottesville, but I think it will flatten off for a while. And the more we can get the rate down now, the more flexibility we'll have in the lean years, which, while I don't think they're going to come in the next couple of years, I think we are going to get some, we're going to have some years where we just have only a couple percent appreciation.
I want to, we're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour, and we'll continue this discussion on the other side, but I want to applaud you for standing up for your principles and being the one person to not support that, because let's face it, everybody's watching. That's more difficult to do than it would be to just go along with everybody else and say, hey, sure, you know, yeah, I'll get in this. I want to applaud you for that. I think you stood up for a whole lot of people out there in the city who and people in the county who pay their taxes to the revenue sharing group, pay it into the city coffers, who want to see some more tightening.
Well, it's actually not that difficult to say I don't want to spend money. What's difficult is to convince the other councilors and actually say, here's where you can cut. And I think in some places I was successful and in some places not as successful.
Kevin Lynch, city councilor, is our guest, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. A quick break here at the bottom of the hour for local news and weather. This is Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070 WINA. Let's continue our discussion with city councilor Kevin Lynch. The phone lines are open if you'd like to join this conversation at 977-1070. Betty has been waiting patiently on the line with a question about city parks. Betty, thanks for the call. You're on with Kevin. Go right ahead.
Thanks. Thanks for this opportunity. My question is that for a long time, part of the problem with people supporting the Meadow Creek Parkway was that we were going to lose, and it's still an issue, parkland. And I've recently heard that the replacement parkland that we're going to get for McIntyre Park is going to be a strip of land next to the road, which I guess for myself and many people I know, that's not a very peaceful, nature-oriented, relaxing idea of a park. So that's one concern I have. And then my second concern is I'm not sure how many city residents realize that the decision to provide more water for our area, which is primarily water that the county needs for all the developments that are happening, the decision was made to use the Ragged Mountain Reservoir and Natural Area, which is also a park, right on the city border. It's an absolutely gorgeous natural area, my favorite place to hike. I was with the Piedmont Bird class there Saturday, and the 17 people in the class, only the teacher realized that the trails we were hiking were going to be underwater if this plan actually materializes. So I'm concerned about the loss of city parks, really, and city land where people can get closer to nature. And I just wondered what the commitment of the council is to that.
Those are really good points, because I agree 100%. We're losing too much green space in Charlottesville, and I think we do have some opportunities to pick up some more parkland around the area, but they're not going to happen by themselves. Starting with the Meadow Creek Parkway, the one of the stipulations that the city made for the parkway to go forward is adequate replacement parkland, functionally replacement parkland. And I would admit that we didn't really get functionally equivalent land, because what we're giving up is rolling hills in the park right now. And what we're getting is, as you say, it's more land. It's about 50 acres if it all gets acquired by VDOT. And we've said that that's the condition that will support it. And they've got about 40 so far. It's a long strip that will take, it will extend McIntyre Park all the way up to Ryle Road. Most of it is steep slopes and bottom land. I think it will have some ecological value to the city. It'll be one of the few places where we own both sides of Meadow Creek. So theoretically, we could do some stream improvement and do some water quality things. But I have to say, you're right. The land that we're getting back, although it's more land, it's not as good a quality land as what we're giving up, and that's unfortunate that seems to be the development pattern around Charlottesville. As far as the Ragged Mountain goes, another good point. We're if the dam gets built to the 40-foot height, which is anticipated, that will flood about 130 acres of another city park. And I've been going to the Ravanna meetings and talked to the other city council. I do not believe that we should give up that 130 acres, essentially flooding it for a county water supply without getting land in return. Now, I do think that there is land to be had that we could get in return, and I would like to see us start acquiring land along Meadow Creek. There's several hundred acres of land between the reservoir and the sewage treatment plant along Moores Creek, which is on the city-county boundary, that's pretty much steep slopes, bottom land, difficult to develop kind of land, and it's still green right now. And I think if we can get it now, we can get it at a point where it's still affordable before the developers figure out how to build on vertical slopes. And if as the way...
It's just a matter of time, Kevin.
You know, when I first got on council, I made a pitch to city council to buy 15 acres of land that Willie Kropp has over by the... had by Riverview Park. And at the time, the other councilors said, well, why should we buy this? You know, what's he going to do with it? Why should we buy what's could only ever be parkland? And sure enough, he sold it to a developer and they're putting, you know, a couple dozen houses on it. So while we might think that land is undevelopable now, give the developers enough time and enough profit, and they'll figure out a way.
Betty, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate you joining the conversation. We're talking with City Councilor Kevin Lynch, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Kevin, to continue the discussion that we were, the topic before the break about the budget, there's a lot of folks in the city who are very upset to see this budget passed at a 95 cents per $100 of assessed value. They wanted to see it come down. You evidently were really the only person who stood for that on council as being emphatic that it should come down. Where did you want to see it go to? And what do we say to all these folks in the city who are finding it more and more difficult to pay these big city taxes?
Well, I think we could have gotten it down to 91, 92 cents. And, you know, I would have done a few things differently. Your readers or your listeners may have already heard this many times, but for example, we had a cumulative 5.5% pay increase for city employees. And while it was called a 4% increase, there's actually another percent and a half that was in market rate adjustments. So it amounted to 5.5% increase in payroll. I would have cut a percent off of that, made 4.5% total. And that would have saved about a cent on the tax rate. There were things like the laptops and video cameras in cop cars. I think they're useful tools. And don't get me wrong, I think the cops need the tools that they need to do their jobs. On the other hand, we already have 37 laptops that we put in the cruisers already. We never have more than 15 cars out at a time. So really what we've got now is one for every car so that the officers don't have to go into the department and check out a laptop at the beginning of their shift. Now, I understand that's a convenience factor, and it's, you know, it might make it a little easier for them, but it's $1 million.
So it's more taxes that the citizens are paying so a laptop can sit in somebody's car overnight.
Right. Now, and if that's going to happen, one of the things I made clear with the other councilors, and I think they do agree on this, if a lot of the things we're paying for are the nice-to-have kind of things, and if we're going to have, for example, video cameras and laptops in every car, you know, regardless of whether that car's in service or not, then, you know, I really want to see those being used. I want to see that crime number come down next year and see how they're really using that to put that tool to use. But that was another example.
Absolutely. I mean, why put money in that budget for police if it's not going to bring crime rate down?
Right. I mean, EMS was another one. There was almost $1 million increase and we do have some issues with response times. Don't get me wrong. I think we need to address that. I think we could have addressed that for $500,000, and I think we still can, hopefully, working with CARS, which I think it's great that we have a volunteer-based service. They're much more cost-effective, and we've got a good volunteer base at the university, so I'd prefer to work with them. You know, if they need help, let's get some money for them, help them with their recruiting. They've got plenty of ambulances. I mean, I think there's some things that we could do, get advanced life support training for our firefighters, maybe even for some of our cops. And do that much cheaper than simply adding 8 firefighters and an ambulance ourselves in the city. So we could have saved, I think, if we had gone and put $500,000 in that program instead of $1 million, that would have been another cent.
Kevin, let me ask you about that. You bring that topic up of cars and the EMS situation in the city. There's this Matrix report, which is, I believe, is going to be released tomorrow morning. Addresses this whole issue of the city and the county cooperating on fire and rescue in that situation. Mm-hmm. Why is it that the city is putting up so much money towards having more ambulances? It's a bit of a mystery to me. And I'll tell you, I talked to somebody who read this Matrix report, read a previous version of it, and he said that it said in there, in this report, that the city was overstaffed, that its fire department had too many people on staff, and that that was probably the motivation for the city coming forward, somebody like Julian saying, we need more ambulances over there in the fire department so we have something for these people to do.
That's a tough one for me to respond to because I haven't seen the draft reports. I do have the final report that I just got today, actually, and read, I guess, enough of it to respond to a few things. I'm not sure that we are overstaffed, but for example, we don't have as many firefighters that have advanced life ALS training as the county does. And so I think that's an area where we could use some improvement. And certainly it points out areas where we could use improvement. We do pay more than the county does per resident, primarily because they have a mixed system where they have a lot of volunteers. We also have a very generous pension program, and that is something that is not
more
just
generous than the county.
Quite a bit more. Yeah. And that's something that is an issue, I think, not just for public safety, but really across the board, and it gets into budget issues. We've always had a great pension program, and that's always been one of the draws of working for Charlottesville, even though the pay hasn't been necessarily competitive, but now we're pulling pay competitive. We've still got a great pension plan, much more generous than, say, the Virginia plan. So at some point, I think we have to, if we're going to be competitive with our pay, my preference would be we drop back to the Virginia retirement system for how we deal with pensions. Otherwise, we can't give everybody everything, and that's what we're trying to do, I think.
We're talking with City Councilor Kevin Lynch. If you'd like to join this conversation, 977-1070. Lewis is on the line. Lewis, you're on with Kevin Lynch. Go right ahead.
Hi, I would like to ask you this question. Why can't, here's my concern, that people in Prospect and people in the poor neighborhood don't get equal representation on council? And I was wondering if you can support a referendum to have a ward system in Charlottesville.
Thanks for the call.
I really think that a ward system would be detrimental to just about everybody in Charlottesville. Charlottesville is not that large a city that any councilor shouldn't know any issue, whether it's in Prospect, West Haven, 10th and Page, Friendship Court.
It's not like it's Richmond, in other words.
There's no excuse for any councilor not to be aware of what's going on in every part of the city. And I strongly believe that all a ward system would do is balkanize us. Everybody used to say up until the last election that, why doesn't Belmont's never had a city councilor, and, there must be something that we're prejudiced against Belmont. And then Dave Norris comes along and he's gotten more votes than anybody since Tom Vandiver, who was the last person who ran from Belmont, like 1992. So I think it's if we can get a good candidate, and certainly I'd like to encourage anybody from low-income neighborhoods who wants to run for city council, call me up, talk to me, or for school board for that matter. We've got school board elections that are coming up. But I think whoever is going to represent Charlottesville has to represent all of Charlottesville and not just a particular small constituency of Charlottesville.
We're talking with Kevin Lynch, a member of Charlottesville City Council since 2000. And you have decided not to stand again for election. And why is that?
Well, not in 2007. I could be back in 2009 or who knows. But
so you're not getting out of the political game or public service entirely at this point.
That's right. But for a couple of reasons, I think it's a good time for me to take a break. First of all, I think the Democratic Party has a really strong bench right now. Good candidates so that once we have the convention in June, I think we'll have some able individuals. But I also do miss working as a grassroots activist. You know, before I got on council, I've worked with a lot of neighborhood groups and a lot of environmental groups. And, you know, I'd say back then what we did was probably 50% effective and 75% fun. And now what I sometimes on council, I think what I do is 50% effective and, 30% fun. So
let me ask you, because you do it, and that's how I met you, is you were an activist and you were standing in the park and you were talking about the Meadow Creek Parkway, and I was there as a young reporter writing down what you said. What do you think has been the biggest surprise now that you've gotten behind the scenes at the table of power in government? What are you over the last 8 years, what have you been most surprised by during your time at City Hall?
Well, the thing that surprised me the most at first was how difficult it really was, even once you got on the inside, to make anything happen. I used to think that city council was sort of like five captains steering a ship, and if three of them could agree which way to point the ship, that's the way it would go. But I realized that it's more like five tugboats pulling on a barge. And the barge sort of being this, you know, the city bureaucracy, and it's going, and the community being the river, you know, and it's moving down the river, and it's got a certain momentum, and it's got, you know, if all city councilors were hit by a bus, the city would still function. I think our job is to keep it off the rocks, to keep it, you know, to bring it into dock when it needs to be and out when it needs to be. But there's some things that very difficult to do unless everybody's, you know, you can make the barge go upstream if everybody's pulling, but that's very hard to pull off.
How about your biggest disappointment over the last few years in government?
Gosh.
And that's the question that precedes your proudest achievement.
Biggest disappointment. Well, you know, getting to the original callers, you know, I really would hope
Betty's
we'd have,
call.
Yeah, Betty's call. Yeah, I really would have hoped we would have more green space by now, you know, and that was part of my issue with the whole Meadow Creek Parkway has always been, you know, we'll let this happen only when we get adequate compensation for replacement land. And I think we're getting there, but, you know, it's 8 years later. It's disappointing that we don't have a green ring around Charlottesville by now. We've got all this undeveloped land, and it's just a matter of time before the developers figure out, you know, how to build, you know, on top of a stream or whatever. You know, places that we take for granted, I think, are disappearing. And I really think that we as a city are more progressive than that, and we just need to make that happen.
Proudest achievement.
Oh, gosh, that's a tough one, too, because they're all very fleeting. well, we have made some positive things. One thing that I'm really glad to see happen that's a positive thing on the environment is we're working with the Nature Conservancy and some private landowners to reclaim the area behind Seminole Square along Meadow Creek, and that's about 50 acres back there. So, you know, that'll be a big addition to our environmental inventory. I think, you know, getting the university not to to put unfiltered coal dust onto this, you know, from their steam plant. That was, I wouldn't say that was proudest, but I think that was a good thing for the environment to get done. We've gotten a few more bike lanes than we had, not as many as I would like. A big one is communication. When I first got on council, we barely had a website. And
you were the first one to really use email to have a discussion. Do you remember that big stink? Oh my gosh, we have counselors emailing each other.
Right. So, and now you can get video streaming of the council meetings. People perceive at least that it's a lot more, or can see that it's a lot more open than it was 8 years ago. And I want to make it even more open because I'm going to be on the outside in another 9 months.
City Councilor Kevin Lynch. Let's see if we can't get you back in here before your term is officially up, because I had so many other more things we wanted to talk about. Thank you for coming in today, and thank you for folks who called in.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.